Do you ever scroll through social media only to find yourself bombarded by bad news, hot takes, mommy bloggers, influencers, and picture-perfect families? Or professionals who are honored, yet also humbled, to share more great news about their career? It's hard to not get wrapped up in how everyone else is doing. But what about you? How are you feeling? Is there anything you'd like to change? And what are you doing to change it? At Cerebral, we believe making time for your mental health is key to your overall well-being. That's why we make it easier than ever to access therapy and doctor-prescribed medication tailored to work for you. And the best part? Cerebral offers in-network care, so you can focus on feeling better without worrying about cost. 72% of people say they felt better in just 12 weeks. So, take the first step today. Visit Cerebral.com/podcast to see how affordable and accessible mental health care can be with insurance. Cerebral. Make time for mind time.
Welcome to Island Crimes and Mysteries. And now, it's time to join your host, Newells, for another episode.
Hey guys, and welcome to another episode of Ireland Crimes and Mysteries. I want to thank you for joining me today, and if you're a returning listener, I want to say a big thank you for your continued support. If this is your first time listening to my podcast, welcome. It's great to have you on board. So without further ado, let's get started on today's story. Right, so guys, today I am joined by Gina Carey, and Gina Carey is Imelda Keenan's niece. Now, Gina has been Imelda's strongest advocate in recent years, trying to find out what happened to her. She has a Facebook page and she is doing everything in her power to try and get the answers as to what happened to her aunt. At the moment, she's trying to get signatures for a petition, as she wants to petition the government to try and get the case upgraded to murder. So I'd like you to sit back and listen to Gina's story. As she tells us all about Imelda, what Imelda was like as a person, how the investigation was going back in the day and how it's going now, and where they're at, really, in the investigation, and how it has affected her family over the years. So, yeah, let's listen to Gina's story about her lovely aunt, Imelda.
I'd like to welcome to the podcast today. I have Gina Carey, who is Imelda Keenan's niece. And Imelda, as you may have known, I did a podcast on her there a few months ago. Imelda Keenan was 22 when she went missing in Waterford on January the 3rd, 1994. And Gina has been her strongest advocate, along with the rest of her family, to try and get answers as to what has happened to Imelda. So welcome, Gina, to the podcast.
Thank you. Thanks for having me.
Hi, you're more than welcome. And so I'll get started and I'll ask you first, what kind of a person was Imelda? Could you tell us what were her dreams, her aspirations, her character?
Imelda was a young, shy girl, very petite with long brown hair. She was a country girl. She lived out in the country in County Leash in Montmellick. She wouldn't be the kind, she wouldn't be very outspoken. She wasn't really a people person. It'd take a lot for her to let someone into her life. She wouldn't be that trustworthy, you know. She loved to be play mammy to all of us. She didn't have any kids. I knew by her she wanted to be a mother someday, and the way she would treat myself and my other cousins, her nieces and nephews. She loved to dance and sing, and she was a child that had she loved teddy bears, and even at the time of her disappearance, she had Mickey Mouse posters in her room, you know, and she was he was engaged at that time, but she still had Mickey Mouse, and she had a diary, and just a girl's girl, that's all in the way.
Yeah, she sounds like a lovely person, so she does. And sure, I mean, she was only 22, you know, she was very young when you think about it, you know, she was only, you could say, practically a child, really. Yeah, very young, really, 22. So I could see why she would still have her Mickey Mouse posters still up on the wall. You know, I know this is probably going to be hard for you now, but could you bring us back to November, December 1993? What kind of form was Imelda in the run-up to her disappearance? Was there any signs of anything now, looking back in hindsight, that you would have noticed? Or was she just looking forward to Christmas like everybody else?
Yeah, well, I would have been So we have to go back 30 years.
I know, yeah.
She vanished. So I was 15 and I was actually living in Mount Melick with her grandmother. My family were living with my grandmother, Imelda's mum. So I wouldn't have saw Imelda around the time of Christmas. I would see her, you know, in the summer and stuff like that. Now, as a young teenager back then, I never heard any of the family worrying about her or, you know, they didn't have any concerns. I know she wasn't coming up for Christmas, but she was coming up in January to put a wreath on her father's grave.
Okay.
And she sent us all a Christmas card that year, and it was she sent us all the same Christmas card. In one of them, I think it was to my grandmother, she did put like that she'll be up to put a wreath on daddy's grave in New Year. Now, her brother Ned did see her 2 weeks before Christmas. I think they had a cup of tea or something like that, and they had a chat. But nothing too concerning, nothing stood out for to make anybody worried, you know, to that extent.
Yeah. So there wasn't anything that you, looking back in hindsight, that would have caused concern or anything like that.
No, and I think back then, like, you know, would have said 30, 40 years ago, all Melda's family would have been young, married, starting children, getting on with their lives and working. When they look back now, they do be thinking, oh, we missed this, you know, we should have paid more attention, but you don't, you're just too busy. No. People are just busy getting on with their lives, you know.
Absolutely.
Normal, as everybody does.
It was pre-mobile phone time, so, you know, you wouldn't have been in as constant contact as you would nowadays with your family and stuff, you know?
Yeah, no, there wasn't much, most of it, Melda would communicate through letters. She loved to write, because she had a diary, so she did write a lot of letters. Because when we did live in England before we came back to Leash, and my mother and Melda, two sisters, they would exchange letters throughout the year, you know. And when Melda got reported missing, it was, you know, my nanny didn't even have a phone, so the guardie had to knock the door to tell her that, you know, she was missing.
Yeah, it was of its time, really, wasn't it? The letters and all that, you know. So can you take us back, actually, now, speaking of your grandmother finding, can you take us back to when you actually found out she was missing? Did you think it was just like that she was gone somewhere, or did you immediately start to panic?
So Melda's partner at the time said that she left to go to the GPO to collect the social welfare payment between 1 and 1:30. And so by 4 o'clock, between 4 and half 4, he went to her brother who was working in Irish Rail at the time and in Waterford, and he went to Ned and he said that Imelda's missing. And Ned said, like, well, it's only like 4:30, like, you know, she's only gone since 1:30, like, just give it a little bit longer. But it was when it started to get dark, Ned started to panic, and he was going driving through the streets of Waterford to find her. Now, I was with my grandmother at the time, so we weren't aware of this at that time. And she had been out that night, and she came in. It was late enough, and it was just me and her then. And then the knock came to the door, and two guards were at the door and told her that Imelda was missing. And like, her whole demeanor changed completely. It was just like a mother instinct, you know, the worry and like the stress. I seen her whole face change. But for me, being a 15-year-old, I was like, oh. Like, she's just gone to a party, like, Nanny, don't be worried, like, she'll be back in the morning. It was the next day then that family were all gathered and headed to Waterford to find out, like, what's going to happen next. Like,
as you said, your grandmother had that maternal instinct. I mean, she knew her, you know, they do, don't they? They just know. Speaking of the Gardaí, were you happy with the initial response from the Gardaí? Do you think that they took it seriously from the get-go?
I was 15 at the time, as I say again, so I wasn't allowed into all the adult conversations that we're having, but I know there wasn't much done by the Gardaí. I don't remember Gard being around us. I don't remember seeing the guards at all, really. The civil defence came from Mount Melick down to Waterford, searched the river. My family did searches. I think they spoke to the guards a couple of times, but there was nothing sticks out. And from my family's point of view, no. As when my uncle would speak to them, he was basically told, like, just to trust them and leave it with them.
Yeah, and that's what they did back then, wasn't it? You trusted the guard, you know, that they were doing their job, you know.
Yeah.
Speaking of the boyfriend and the statement that she went to collect her dole, that was the last time he saw her on January the 3rd. And now we all know that it was just after Christmas and that was a Monday, which would have been a bank holiday Monday. So, I mean, Imelda collecting her dole on the bank holiday Monday after Christmas was not going to happen because the post offices were closed. So that kind of cancels out that statement immediately, does it not?
Yeah, absolutely. Like, it stands out a mile, but when the guards didn't seem to be too bothered about it, you know, my family trusted the guards. My uncle, that was the head of the family time, he was in the army. And, you know, so, you know, when Imelda went missing, like, my family were dealing with, like, the emotions and the feelings of the loss and where is she and the panic and the stress. And just hoping that the guards were dealing with the evidence and the facts, you know. So as time went on, they just assumed that the guards were doing their job. And when the guards were not really, you know, coming up with anything, my family just kept putting their trust in them that one day they will. And I think they live to regret that now, that they didn't push it so much, so quick, you know, at the time.
Absolutely. But like, again, as I said, like, you know, especially that generation, say the generation before us, you know, they really trusted people in positions of authority, like the doctor and the priest and the guards. You know, they could do, you know, they didn't think of them as humans that could make mistakes.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah.
Put all their trust in them. And as we know now, I suppose, when somebody goes missing, it's the first few hours and day or 24 hours is the most important time, really, if you're to kind of get ahead of the investigation, I suppose, so to speak.
Yeah, it really is. And when my family went, you know, they all arranged to meet at Melda's brother's house now, because he, you know, he lived in Waterford as well, and they all went there, and then they decided to go to Melda's flat just to see, you know, if there's anything unusual. Did she pack a bag? Did she, you know? But when they went in, like, her cigarettes were there, her a few pound that she had, her glasses were there. Now she takes her glasses off for pictures, but she'd always wear them otherwise. Her diary wasn't there, and the reed for her father's grave was there, and her cat was still there. So unusual, you know. The guards didn't come into the flat, so, you know, it was an absolute mess, really.
And I'm guessing Imelda, I'm an animal lover, so I'm guessing if Imelda had a cat, she was an animal lover too. And I know if I was leaving, I was not going to leave without my dogs. So I'm presuming Imelda would have been the same, and she would not have left her cat behind.
Yeah, of course. You know, you know, pet lovers wouldn't do that. You know, they'd bring them to some house or something and say, look, I'll be back in a few minutes.
And the other thing that stood out to me, Gina, was, again, it was January the 3rd, and I'm presuming it was probably a day or two later by the time your family got to the flat, and all her Christmas presents were still there unopened. And I know if Imelda was acting like me, I couldn't be still looking at my Christmas presents on January 3rd, you know?
Open on Christmas Eve, one day before maybe, but we definitely wouldn't be waiting until the 3rd, 4th or 5th of January, like.
Absolutely. None of that makes sense to me, like, you know.
No.
Me now, I mean, that's just me, obviously, I don't know, but that makes me think that she wasn't there on Christmas Day to open her presents, or Christmas Eve. Now, that's just me surmising, obviously.
Yeah.
You know, because, I mean, it's not normal, really, is it?
No, it's not.
No,
definitely not.
No, absolutely. Could you tell us about the investigation, kind of, where are we at now with the investigation?
The investigation through the years was pretty dead in the water. I've been doing this for nearly 15 years, and we got shut down the whole time with the Gardaí, and everything that we said was shut down. They've never done a search. They've never done anything. Like, they have not searched anywhere for us. Any searches that you've read, or Ferry Bank or places like that, that was us, you know, and people that came to help us. So this was going on and on. And then, you know, my nanny passes away, and then Donald, the head of the family, he passed away. Ned passed away before him, and then Ned, and like, so then we have my Uncle Jerry. So he's the head of the family now. there was a page, I made a Facebook page in 2013 for Melinda. And, you know, I used to put up certain little appeals. It would, nothing would ever happen. And then, so it was more of a memorial, you know, every birthday and Christmas and anniversaries. And then I said to my Uncle Jerry, I said, look, let me just put stuff, what we know, out onto the internet and, you know, see what we can do. But my family were very old-fashioned and they were scared of the likes of the internet and they were scared of getting in trouble because the guards sort of made them feel like, don't go over our heads. And that was, my uncle, you know, being in the army and stuff, they didn't want to go over their heads. So when I spoke to Jerry about it, I said, let's go, let's put everything that we know out there. And he goes, oh, I'd be afraid to get in trouble. And I said, look, I don't mind, let's do it. So we did it. Like, so I did, I went hell for leather on the internet and put all the information, where she lived, her face, people that were involved were at the time, you know, like her partner, her brothers, put them all up onto the page. And next minute, messages start coming in, like, oh, I remember her. And so the past 2 years has been more progress than the whole 30 years. So we found out loads of information that we never even knew a life that Melda was living. We weren't aware of it. Okay. You know, that she had detached her. She had friends down in Waterford, but she left them friends when she met her partner. And then she sort of distanced herself from her friends and she's got new friends. But none of these new friends ever came forward when Melda was reported missing. So I was getting the names of them. And so I was getting all the much information as I could for as long as I could, followed up all of them, tracked everybody down, printed everything off and went into a meeting with the guard, brought it in. And they shut it down. They don't give an opinion. They can't judge. Like it's like they were humorous more than anything. And then we brought that in and I kept still appealing and then more stuff came in. So we asked for another meeting and gave them that. Then we done the appeal in January gone and loads of information came in. So we said, from what we've heard in the past 2 years, we knew Melda was gone from day one because Melda was doing a computer course at the time of her disappearance. So she had an interest in technology, IT. So she would be interested in the internet today. And if she was alive, she would Google her name and see that, like, the pain of her family, her loved ones passing away. She would not let anyone suffer like that. It's not in her nature. It's not her character. So what we found out gave us... When someone goes missing or is murdered, there's a motive. And when we put everything laid out, there's a motive there now of why this could have happened to her. So we kept saying to the guys, we need this upgraded to murder. And he's like, oh, it's not that simple. And I says, well, what do you need? We need evidence. And I'm like, our statement's evidence. And he says, well, they can be used as evidence. And I'm like, well, you have all these people from that don't even know each other from different parts of Ireland. And they're all saying the same thing. There's a pattern here. You know, we were so frustrated in the rooms. It's terrible.
I feel your frustration just listening to you.
Well, you're begging them. Like, you know, you're not talking about a missing bike or, you know, like, you know, even for a missing animal, everybody on the town would go out and keep an eye out. Absolutely. For the, and they'd want to know, did anyone find the dog? Or, you know, she's a human being, a person, a young girl that had a whole life ahead of her. And we said we wanted it upgraded and, you know, it wasn't happening. And then they said to give us another meeting just recently. They promised us that meeting in April, then it went to May, and then it went October the 3rd. So we went into the meeting and sat down and I was just waiting to hear the three words I wanted to hear. And that was upgrade, murder inquiry. You know, these are the words I was waiting for. So I wasn't really taking in anything else they were saying. And the more I didn't hear the word, the more frustrated I got, the more angry, you know. But when I went away and looked at a peer review, it is very good. It is a very, very good peer review to, you know, to have. It's not a murder inquiry, but it's a team of experts that are going to analyze every single thing. Like, they have over 80 statements and 130 exhibits collected. They're going to examine from the start of the investigation how it was handled, who was in her life at the time. They're going to dissect every single inch of what they have. All the information that we have brought from our hard work to the table. They're going to analyse it, and they just asked us to give them time. Now, I didn't like that because we've had 30 years. We don't have time on our hands anymore. Like, people are getting old, and I don't mean that. People that know stuff are getting old and are not well. And
in a sense, it's good that they're having all these people on it now. And maybe, did they say maybe once they've reviewed it all and looked into it, and there might be the chance of an upgrade to murder?
They never mentioned the word murder inquiry. They did not mention the word at all. They just said that they are going, they promise us that they will do the absolute best they can to look over everything. They'll say that if one lead brings them down a rabbit hole, they'll go down that rabbit hole. If they don't find anything, they'll close it off and they'll go down another one. Now, we find it very hard to trust. I find it very hard to believe, to put trust in them. I do have to put the trust in them, because if I don't, I'm going to be eaten up with stress and worry. I just have to sort of like let go, let God, and hope that like they give Mella the investigation that she deserves.
Yeah, absolutely. Like, you know, and hopefully, as you said, as we were saying there earlier, things have moved on, and like the Gardaí nowadays, hopefully, you know, I'm not saying that it wasn't a professional outfit back in the 90s, but, you know, things progress over years, and that there is the Gardaí nowadays are a lot more professional and willing to give that extra mile, hopefully, for your sake.
Yeah, you would hope that these new detectives and Gardaí will be saying, look, there's too many cold cases out there. There's too many families in this situation. Like, let's go and, you know, see, can we crack one at least? You know, I would be so happy to hear, you know, of one family getting, you know, their answers. I, like, we're all there for each other, and it's terrible, like, that, you know, to us, she's our family, but to the Gardaí, she's just a case number in a file. And, you know, they can go home to their families at the end of the day and switch off, but we don't.
Yeah, you know, still don't know where Imelda is.
No, we don't know.
Now, in talking about in getting it upgraded to murder, you have started a petition online, isn't that right?
Yeah, we'll have.
Could you tell us that?
So basically, the guard, when at the meeting, the guard said, like, you know, give them the time, basically, and the space to do their job. But I feel, you know, that we still have to keep doing what we're doing. And I know if I get, it's like 10,000 signatures, you know, I get a response from the government. And we're just trying to push everything as much as we can. We don't want to sit back like we did 30 years ago and trust the process, because that got us nowhere. So I respect the Gardaí, you know, and I respect them to give them the space and not to be pounding them. Like, because I was texting them on WhatsApp and everywhere, and, like, you know, I couldn't help it. But now I've took a step back and said, look, let them do them. But we have to do this, you know, for Imelda, you know, because I think I've done all the appeals, as many as I can. And people do still contact me.
Yes.
Some don't want to bring it any further. They just want to talk to me about it. And, you know, but we just have to get the petition out there, show them that it's not just the Keane family that wants this, you know, everybody wants this, you know, Melda needs this. It has to be done. The truth is in the statements already of what happened to Melda. Whoever's involved is in them statements already, I can guarantee it. They know.
You're within a whisper of it, of getting the answers.
Just need the experts to go in and say, look, yeah, you know, if they don't see, if these experts, and obviously they're experts, I'm not, and if they actually do the work and at the end say, look, no, she still passes a missing person, I'll probably have to question what way I'm thinking, because for me, looking at it on a board, like, I know everything, what we've done and what people have said, to me, she was murdered.
Yeah. And for people listening, you know, and I'd urge everybody that's listening to please help Gina and getting it over the 10,000 signatures. Where do they go? I'll put it in the show notes, obviously, as well. But where do they go to sign the petition, Gina?
So I have Imelda's page. It's on Facebook, and it's called Imelda Keane and Missing or Murdered. The links are on that. I do keep reposting them, and I would really appreciate if some could just take 5 minutes out of time. It's an online petition, just to sign it and even share it. And if they don't want to sign it, just to even share it to their friends. I only have 1,000 so far, and very hard to keep pushing that, you know. And so if anyone does see it, I really would appreciate it if they could sign it for us.
And we need to get this petition to 10,000. So it would be very appreciated by everybody that's listening if you could just take the time out. And you don't even have to be in Ireland. If you're in another country, you can still follow the link and help Gina out and try and help her family get those answers. Is there anything else now, Gina, while you have the audience here, and that you'd like to add about either Imelda, about the investigation, or about how it's even affecting your own family over the years, you know?
Well, I'd just like to say that I know, like, I might come across, you know, on the internet, like, naming people, putting people's names out there and putting pictures, and but I'm doing it for a reason, and it's the only way, it's the only thing we have left. We've nothing to lose. I have to put as much information out there, and I know some it does come across a bit like that, you know, I'm a bit crazy and stuff, but I'm not. I'm just desperate to find my auntie, and I promised my granny that when I was a young age that I will find her. For her, she's not here now, but I'll keep doing it. And, you know, I'm not putting up anything that isn't the truth. I'm only speaking the truth. So, you know, just to give us all the support. And we do appreciate every single person that is supporting us for the past 30 years. And, you know, and the media and people like yourself with the podcast, it's just amazing. So we do appreciate that.
Listen, anything, as I said, anything I can do to help, no problem at all. And I'm excited to be able to have you on so that you know, that you get the chance to talk and to the people. I can't even imagine, to be honest with you, the trauma for all of your family over the years, and the ongoing trauma, you know, because it just doesn't end, really, does it? Like, my kind of overriding thing that I've noticed from all these cases that I've been doing is it starts out, obviously, that you want to find the person. And as things go on, and you want, you know, then you want to get justice, whatever. But as the years go on and it's getting to 20 and 30 years, you just want to know what happened to them. I've heard people saying that they're not even interested in the justice side of it anymore. They literally just want their family back so that they can give them a Christian burial or whatever, you know. And I presume that's the case.
Absolutely. Like, you know, we just want Melda. Like, my uncle has said many times, like, they don't want just this. Like, they don't want to know anything. Just tell us where she is, and, you know, that's it. But the only people we need the Gardaí on our side, and you know, if a body turns up, it'll be them going for the judge. They'll have to go and find, you know, it's a murder investigation. We'll have Melva. We'll be quite content with that, like, to have her back. But, you know, the Gardaí will have to do what they have to do. You know, like, there's places that we think Melva is in and we can't touch it. Like, so we often stood at a certain place and goes, like, she could be there. But we can't touch that unless the guards give us permission. So we need the guards' help as well. And it's just so...
I suppose there could be evidence there as well that could be disturbed, you see. So as you said, they're the professionals, so you want them in and check out these places.
But then they want concrete evidence and this, that, and the other. But, well, we would dig up every building if we were able, you know, because it's our loved one. But they need concrete evidence before they can even touch something. So I don't know. It's just, how do we get the evidence? It's just so hard.
And the evidence is Imelda's remains.
Yeah.
And that's what you're saying. We think she's down there. So in order to get her remains, you need to dig. But they're saying you need evidence.
So we need Imelda to just give a sign. And, you know, but you can't, it doesn't work like that.
No, it must be unbelievably frustrating for you.
Yeah.
So listen, Gina, I want to thank you, as I said, for coming on the podcast. I really appreciate it. And I mean, if there's any updates in the future, you're more than welcome to come back on and keep us up to speed, you know.
Yeah.
Melda's name out there for everybody. And as I said to people listening, please go over to Imelda's Facebook page and please sign the petition, follow the link, share the link, follow the page, and Gina, update it. Please God, we'll have a positive outcome and that Imelda will be able to come home to her family at some stage, and Gina and the rest of her family, her uncle, and that will have peace of mind in the end. And that's all we wish for you at this stage, Gina.
Yeah, thank you.
All right. And thanks again for coming on.
No problem at all.
Right, so guys, that was Gina Carey. That was Imelda's niece. And that was their story. As I said to her off camera, you know, every one of us needs a Gina in our lives to have our back. I mean, Imelda would be so proud of all the work she's doing to try and get the answers and to find her and bring her home to her family. So if we can help in any small way, if you're willing to help, would you please, please sign that petition? It's just one small, tiny little thing that we can do to help the family. Yeah, they'd be so appreciative. Yeah, and as we said, we'll keep you updated. If there's any updates, we'll bring them to you here on Ireland Crimes and Mysteries. But for now, I'd like to thank you all for listening to Gina's story. And I will see you all again in the next podcast. So guys, that's it for today's episode of the Ireland Crimes and Mysteries podcast. Again, thanks for your listenership, and don't forget to subscribe to the show and hit that auto download so you never miss an episode. Until the next time, keep your eyes open and your mind curious. This podcast has been compiled from information gathered in the public sphere, like news articles, documentaries, and open source material that can be found on the web. Everything in this podcast is alleged unless a conviction has taken place.
You've been listening to Ireland Crimes and Mysteries. Join Newells for another episode coming real soon. And keep up to date by following our social media sites, our YouTube channel, and our website, islandcrimesandmysteries.ie.
Do you ever scroll through social media only to find yourself bombarded by bad news, hot takes, mommy bloggers, influencers, and picture-perfect families? Or professionals who are honored, yet also humbled, to share more great news about their career? It's hard to not get wrapped up in how everyone else is doing. But what about you? How are you feeling? Is there anything you'd like to change? And what are you doing to change it? At Cerebral, we believe making time for your mental health is key to your overall well-being. That's why we make it easier than ever to access therapy and doctor-prescribed medication tailored to work for you. And the best part? Cerebral offers in-network care, so you can focus on feeling better without worrying about cost. 72% of people say they felt better in just 12 weeks. So, take the first step today. Visit Cerebral.com/podcast to see how affordable and accessible mental health care can be with insurance. Cerebral. Make time for mind time.